Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
But immediately, a very intensive reaction occurred in the community, in the sheriff's department, in the city police department, in the district attorney's office. It was a very shocking thing. This young lady that was a model, sort of a child, and her parents were well known and respected in the community. So it really gripped the soul of the community, I would say, when it happened. And as a result of that, a great deal of effort and energy and innovative investigation developed as a result of those factors that made it different than some mugging on the street or something of that sort. It just doesn't happen in La Crosse.
Hello, and welcome to episode 31 of The Vanished. Tonight, I'll be discussing the disappearance of 15-year-old Evelyn Hartley from La Crosse, Wisconsin. This is an older case, but it has many mysterious clues. Evelyn was known as a responsible and studious teen. On the evening of October 24th, 1953, she had planned to attend the La Crosse State College homecoming game. She was asked to babysit for the Rasmussen family that night because they planned to attend the game as well, and their regular babysitter was going to go to the game too. Evelyn decided to forego the game and babysit to earn some extra money. The Rasmussen family was friends with the Hartley family. Evelyn's father and Mr. Rasmussen were both college professors. Mr. Rasmussen picked Evelyn up around 6:30 p.m. that evening and brought her back to his home at 2415 Hochler Drive. Evelyn brought several school books with her that evening so that she could study after the baby went to sleep. Mrs. Rasmussen instructed Evelyn to put the baby in her crib at 7 p.m. and then cover her with a blanket at 7:15. Mr. and Mrs. Rasmussen left for the game with their 7-year-old daughter around 6:45 p.m. Evelyn's mother said that she got a really bad feeling about Evelyn around 7 p.m. and thought about calling her, but talked herself out of it because she had only left about a half hour before, and Evelyn always called at 8:30. I think we've all done that before. You get a bad gut feeling about something, and then you talk yourself out of it by rationalizing the situation. Evelyn never made that 8:30 call to her parents. They began calling the Rasmussen home, but got no answer. Her father, Richard, decided to go check on her. He arrived at 9:20 p.m. and found that all the doors were locked. Richard found an open basement window and was able to enter the home. He found the lights on, the radio playing, and the baby asleep in the crib. Richard went to a neighbor's home and called the police at 9:49 p.m. There was a lot of evidence at the scene which indicated that a struggle had taken place. The living room furniture was out of place. Evelyn's glasses were on the floor and they were broken. There were mud stains on the carpet, and one of her shoes was found in the living room. At the bottom of the basement steps, Evelyn's other shoe was found. There was a stepladder underneath the open basement window. The Rasmussens had had it down there recently to paint. Tennis shoe prints were found on the ground outside the window. Similar footprints were found around other homes in the neighborhood. And the police believe that a prowler may have been scoping out homes in the neighborhood when he saw young Evelyn, who appeared to be alone. Police discovered that the open basement window showed several signs of forced entry. The screen had been removed and propped up against the wall. Three other windows to the home had pry marks. A significant amount of blood was found in the backyard. They found two separate pools of blood with human hair. One was in the Rasmussen yard, and the other was in a window well of another house. That blood matched Evelyn's blood type. There was also some blood in the basement in the area of the open window. It has been questioned whether or not Evelyn could have survived losing that amount of blood. A bloody handprint and other blood stains were found on the side of the Rasmussen home, Bloodstains were also found on two other homes in the neighborhood. A neighbor reported hearing three screams around 7 o'clock that night.
Well, about either two or three screams. And then the last one was kind of choked off, shut off in the middle. And I thought some of the neighbor kids were being punished or something, and been taken in the house and closed door slam. And we let it go at that. Not thinking anything about it until the next day when we heard what had been going on. But it came from around that direction, and I turned around. My wife was in the kitchen. She heard the scream all the way through the house. It carried that well to the kitchen.
What did it sound like? A playful scream? Or?
No, it didn't. It sounded like stop or get away from me, or that kind of a scream.
You saw a car then at about 7:30?
Yes, it was an old sedan, dark tan, I would say, about the color of your jacket.
Several neighbors reported seeing a light-colored car driving through the neighborhood that evening. They did not recognize the vehicle. The last sighting of the car was around 8 o'clock p.m. Dogs were brought in and tracked Evelyn's scent about 2 blocks where it is believed that she was put into a vehicle. The theory surrounding the different pools of blood is that she was either dragged or carried and then put down by her abductor to rest 2 separate times. The search was called off that night around 1 a.m., but resumed the next day. Word quickly spread about her disappearance, and by noon the next day, over 1,000 people came out to the Rasmussen home to help with the search. The police split the crowd into groups, and they were instructed to go to different areas and search. This went on for days. Several days after Evelyn's disappearance, a man came forward and said that he had been in the neighborhood that night to pick up a relative. Specifically, he was in the area where the dogs had tracked Evelyn's scent to. He stated that he saw 3 people walking in that area around 7:15 that evening. He said that it appeared to be 2 men helping a woman who appeared to be intoxicated. He saw the 3 of them speed off in a 2-tone Buick. The girl was in the back seat, resting her head on the seat in front of her, and one of the men was next to her while the other drove. The man did not think much of it because he assumed that they were just young people who had been partying on homecoming night. Thousands of cars were searched, and the owners were given stickers that said, "My car is okay," to put on their vehicles. About 1,700 college and high school students were questioned and given polygraphs. People started to get mad, and the school board quickly put a stop to this. All known sex offenders in the area were brought in for questioning. Women's bloody undergarments were found on train tracks below an overpass about 2 miles south of La Crosse. Evelyn's mother confirmed that they were the kind that Evelyn wore, but it is not 100% confirmed that they belonged to Evelyn. A bloody pair of men's pants were found several miles down the road. A bloody pair of size 11 Goodrich tennis shoes and a size 36 blue denim jacket were found on the side of Highway 14, about 14 miles from La Crosse. The blood on these items matched Evelyn's blood type, and the shoes matched the prints around the crime scene. It was later determined that the particular shoe was sold in Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, and Illinois. It was also determined that 2 people had worn the shoes, and that one of the people had feet larger than size 11. I do not know how advanced the science was at the time, but they believed that the dirt on the shoes matched the dirt from around the Rasmussen home. The shoes had a very particular wear mark on them that happened to match the pedals that Whizzer bikes had at the time. There was a hair found inside the shoe that was thought to be from an African American, but again, I do not know how accurate the science was at the time. The jacket had been cut and rehemmed, and also had wear marks that are believed to have been from wearing a safety harness. Authorities concluded that the shoes and jacket belonged to 2 different people because someone with size 11 feet would most likely be too big to wear a size 36 jacket. I personally think that this reasoning may be a bit outdated, but it is something to consider. Inside the pocket of the jacket were bristles that are believed to have been from a scrub brush that had flecks of metallic paint on them. Pictures of the jacket were widely publicized, but no one ever came forward to say that they recognized it. Authorities believe that whoever owned the jacket was a steeplejack. If you don't know what that is a person who climbs tall buildings to repair or build them. Steeplejacks often use bosun's or boatswain's chairs, and the harness that you would use with those matched the mark on the jacket. According to a local newspaper, a window peeper had been prowling the southern end of the city for about a year. Someone said that the man's face had appeared in their basement window, and another woman said that he laughed at her while she was ironing clothes and said, "I'm going to get you." The publicity that this case received brought a lot of attention seekers out of the woodwork. The Hartleys received several letters, including this one.
"Just a note to let you know that Miss Hartley is in my power. Don't try to trace this letter because I didn't leave any evidence. I'll let you know the ransom later. You stupid people almost had me back there, but I managed to escape." It was signed with the skull and crossbones. Another letter from St. Paul read, "Don't worry anymore about that Evelyn Hartley. She went away with a man of La Crosse, is well and fine, and after all that commotion is afraid to come home, phone, or write. You will hear from her when all has calmed down. All that so-called evidence was planted to mislead. She wanted to be forgotten, is already sorry of her bargain. I would have written you before had I known." She signed it M.M.
Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey, and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows.
There have been many suspects in this case over the years. First of all, I would like to mention that Richard Hartley was cleared of any involvement in his daughter's disappearance very early on. Some detectives feel very strongly that two people were involved, based on the sighting of the two men helping a woman into a car, the size discrepancy between the shoes and the jacket, and it is also thought that the items that were found would have been tossed out of a vehicle by a passenger and not the driver. The first suspect may shock you. Ed Gein just happened to be visiting family who lived just blocks away from the Rasmussen home on the night that she disappeared. If you do not know who Ed Gein is, I suggest you look him up. He is a well-known murderer who also would dig up graves and make items out of human body parts. While this theory is interesting, the way that Evelyn was taken does not match his other crimes. He was also given a polygraph and passed. In 1989, a man on his deathbed came forward and told police that a car and a body were buried in Pickwick, Minnesota. Authorities believe that this information was credible enough to dig in the area.
Well, as you know, we started about 9:30 this morning with a backhoe, and we trenched in an area of approximately 100 feet by 100 feet, where we believe this gully ran and the car allegedly was buried. Crisscrossed it in a pattern and dug test holes in various other places there, and we were unable to come up with anything but rock and dirt.
If we had to do the same thing all over again based on what we presently know, what we knew back in February, we'd have done the same thing, whether it was on this side of the river or the other side of the river. So there's no regrets there. It's just that nothing was found. We feel as if we've reached the height of this particular ladder and we can't go any higher unless some more new information develops.
One problem with this theory is that the people who gave the tip said the car was buried next to a barn. The barn in question was not even built at the time of Evelyn's disappearance. A couple came forward many years later and told a story about a farmer that they had worked with. They had been working with him on the day that Evelyn vanished. He had been talking about going into town that night to find a woman. They said that this farmer always wore a denim jacket that was cut off at the waist and tennis shoes. They did not make the connection between the farmer and Evelyn until weeks later when the shoes and jacket were found. They pointed out that in 1953, the farmer still used horses, and the mark on the jacket could have been from the harness used to work with the horses. They said that after that day, they never saw him again with those shoes, jacket, or the vehicle that he had been driving at the time. The farmer in question had died 10 years before this couple came forward. Another suspect is a 31-year-old African-American man from St. Paul, Minnesota. He had been connected to some similar attacks on women in Madison, Wisconsin. He drove a car that was similar to the tan car that was spotted in the neighborhood on the night that Evelyn disappeared. They were unable to find any evidence to link him to her disappearance. In 2003, a man came forward with a tape that he had recorded about 35 years earlier in a tavern that he owned. The man speaking on the tape was Clyde Peterson. On the tape, he says that he went with a man by the name of Jack Goldfair and a mutual friend to La Crosse on the evening that Evelyn disappeared. Jack either knew Evelyn or knew of her and knew she would be babysitting that night. Clyde said that they took her to a friend's farm and killed her. Authorities have not released the exact location of the farm or where he said that she was buried, and they have said that it was in the Mississippi River floodplain and her body may have washed away many years ago. The three men mentioned in the tape are all now deceased. Jack Goldfair committed suicide just 10 years after Evelyn disappeared. Evelyn's disappearance is very scary. I can remember being that age and being alone babysitting. It seems like a scenario out of a scary movie. It is unlikely that this case will ever be solved, but the possibility does still remain. In my personal opinion, I think that the theory that more than one person was involved makes sense. If you're going to be carrying a 15-year-old out of a basement window, that would be tough. That little step stool that I mentioned earlier would make it slightly easier, but it would still be very difficult. It would make more sense to have one person on the inside and one person on the outside. I find the discovery of this tape in 2003 to be very compelling, and I believe that is probably the most likely scenario. Evelyn Hartley was 5'7" tall and weighed 126 pounds. She was last seen wearing a white ship and shore blouse, size 16 jeans, and white bobby socks. If you have any information about the disappearance of Evelyn Hartley, please call the La Crosse Police Department at 608-785-5962. That brings us to the end of episode 31. If you like this show, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. I would like to thank everyone who has generously donated on Patreon to help cut back on the production costs of the show. If you would like to contact me, please go to thevanishedpodcast.com. There is a contact form there and also a form for topic suggestions. I am on Twitter at TheVanishedPod, and on Facebook there is a page and also a private discussion group. Everyone is welcome to join the group. It is only private so that your comments don't show to all of your Facebook friends. If you have a loved one who is missing and would like them to be featured on the show, please contact me at thevanishedpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks everyone for listening, and I will catch up with you next week.
She was a very fine girl, a girl of exceptional good character, and no one could say a bad word about Evelyn Hartley.
So she wouldn't have run off?
No, I would, in my estimation, that would be out of order.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges. They will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.